Hello and welcome to Real Talk. I'm your host, Susan McCabe, here with you every Tuesday at lunchtime to seek answers to questions, large and small, or anything that tends to pique yours or my curiosity. We are available here at Voice of Vashon 101.9 FM, KVSHLP, or at voiceofvashon.org at your convenience. That's voiceofvashon.org/realtalk. Today, our topic is one that affects everybody, and it's coming in the form of a new novella written by my guest today. He is Wes Charles. Welcome, Wes.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
The name of the book is Linus Tokes and the Billing Bot. What's this about?
It's sort of a short circuiting of the detective genre bumping up against the medical business, and so it's a little bit inspired by the old Sherlock Holmes stories. They were all short novellas, except for a few of them, but the vast majority were very short, quick read stories, and they're adventures. And this is an adventure. It is a mystery. But it involves a Swedish medical investigator running headlong into the American medical business and being rather shocked and horrified at what he finds.
It is shocking and horrifying. And I read it. It's a great read. It's a page turner, and it can be done in a quick sitting on the beach if you're lucky enough to get to one. So why did you make him Swedish?
I've spent a lot of time in Sweden, and I spent a year in university over there. I worked in a hospital over a summer over there, and I ended up later marrying a Swedish woman and being sort of adopted into her family. And many decades later, I've been able to see the differences between what healthcare is like in Sweden, but also in England and all across Europe, and frankly, pretty much everywhere in the advanced nations other than the United States. And it got me motivated as I watched the decline of my wife's parents, and I became a little bit more involved. And I joined a group called Physicians for a National Health Program. And
in Sweden or in the U.S.?
In the U.S. It's a group of 50,000 doctors. I recommend PNHP.org, and for years and years, they've been trying to advance healthcare justice, and really, which the crux of that is a single payer system. And it, you know, I just thought, I love the genre of detective novels and spy novels and that type of stuff. And how could I bump these things up against each other and have some fun with it? And that's what I did.
So how does Linus Tokes' adventure expose to the reader the Achilles heel of the American, quote, healthcare system?
Well, most people, and certainly myself included, don't really fully understand the complexity of the billing side of our healthcare system. To say that it's Byzantine is not accurate enough. It's far more complicated than that. There are so many health insurance policies, and there are so many different payers, and there are so many different rules and exceptions, and you get into all these different denials and things like that. It's vastly complicated, and systems have been built over years and years, and Linus Tokes steps into this to unravel a mystery. I don't want to give too much away, but it's a surprise bill that somebody gets, and it leads him down a very dark path where he bumps up against AI and bots and bill collectors and all sorts of strange creatures who inhabit the dark side of the billing world of the U.S. medical system. And he's just shocked and outraged, and it's just a lot of fun to read and a lot of fun to write.
I bet it was. And, well, I would think it'd be kind of challenging to make the American healthcare billing system fun and exciting. It doesn't sound exciting, but you managed to pull it off in this novella.
Well, there's a lot of research that goes into it, and I have assistance from, I had an outside billing specialist who was kind of guiding me along the way. Also, a surgeon who is very, very helpful, just to make sure that those parts of it are on track and accurate enough. It is a fiction. It's a little bit of a fantasy, but it's all absolutely plausible.
So these things happen.
I think they certainly could happen, yes.
So without giving too much away, the novella discusses a gigantic bill that turns out to be fraudulent.
That's right.
But what did you learn from your research that would tell us or support how folks in the U.S. end up bankrupt because of gigantic medical bills? Are those bills pumped up
because
of the system?
There are, first of all, people in the United States perhaps don't understand that they shouldn't have to pay anything. We are brought up to believe that. In other countries, they don't pay. They don't have to pay for, they don't think about bronze or silver or gold or HSAs or deductibles or co-pays or co-insurance or percentage. Any of that stuff are out-of-network costs. It's the out-of-network costs that really, really nail people in this country. So there's plenty of ways that people are bilked of their money by the system without actually having to explain them as fraud. They're all considered legitimate. And it really shouldn't be that. If you take an outsider's point of view and go to other countries, the notion of medical bankruptcy, which is medical bills are the single biggest cause of bankruptcy in the United States. And other countries, that they're just shocked. They're horrified. They don't think it never crosses their mind that this could ever happen. Because here in the United States, we live with tremendous anxiety about health insurance.
Yes.
We have to renew it every year. We have to think about maybe sometimes switching doctors because our employer has switched a plan, or we have to think about escalating, you know, the rising deductibles and all that. Imagine living in a country where you just know you could walk into a hospital or a doctor's office anywhere and you don't have to think about that stuff. You're covered from the day you're born until the day you pass away. And that's the way it is in these other countries.
That is unfathomable as an American. I wonder how it is we in the U.S., why we continue to tolerate this.
I think it's very hard for us to think straight about it because it is such a complex subject. And we're up against information campaigns that come in the form of slick commercials from very large corporate interests that really don't want to have this dismantled, because healthcare in the United States has grown to be about 17% of our total GDP.
Good grief.
And if you go to other countries, it's more like about 10 or 11, or maybe even 7 or 8. So we are handing over a lot of our national purse to these layers of excessive costs that really shouldn't be there.
So the groups that are benefiting, I'm guessing, are health insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah,
and physicians,
maybe
physician groups.
But physicians also have very high costs because a physician's office needs to hire a bunch of people to tangle with the insurance companies to plead and beg for payment or to cover patients that they desperately want to take care of. But the insurance company might say, no, can't do that. So you have a lot of the PNHP has estimated that there's something like about 30% additional administrative cost in the handling of even just an
just
office
the handling
visit. Yeah, just the handling, and that's you know, in these corporations, they have to take care of their shareholders. They have marketing costs they have to cover, executive salaries, profits, that type of thing. So imagine if you take all of that out, you're left with more money to play with. And this is what Linus Tolke runs into and grapples with as an outsider, as a Swede coming into this. He was a medical investigator in Sweden, and it's not as if some level of medical fraud is not going on pretty much everywhere. It was just a different type of fraud that he was investigating there. It might be a crooked doctor or something like that. But there will be more stories, and there will be more visits to the medical system through his eyes, and it should be fun.
Oh, so there are going to be sequels to this?
Yeah, Linus Tolke is about 5 years old in my mind. I started writing the very first novel for Tolke. I didn't get far because life intervened, but yeah. And that was about 5 years ago. I went back and took a look at all that. There's mountains of research, and I think it's just a lot of fun.
Well, we're talking with author Wes Charles, who has recently published Linus Tolke and the Billing Bot.
It's a
novella. And it's about medical fraud and the healthcare industry in the United States as kind of a whodunit.
It's very much a whodunit. One thing leads to another thing, and it's just sort of interesting. That's where I've enjoyed books by Chandler or Mosley or Daniel Silver and Le Carre, just the dean of it all. Ian Rankin, Stieg Larsson, Henning Mankell, and then back to all the way when I started as a kid with Arthur Conan Doyle. But,
so you've been reading mysteries your whole life.
Yeah, it's fun stuff.
Kind of in your genes. Huh?
Yeah.
Which, to my mind, also speaks to an interest in investigating and doing research. Would that be an accurate description of your bent?
Well, yeah, it would be. I went to journalism school, and I was a researcher and a fact checker in my early years at Rolling Stone, and I have media experience and a lot of years in media and then a lot of years in technology. So you put all this together, and I'm a stickler for fact and truth, and I believe that we're in a tough time right now societally as truth comes under fire.
We sure are.
Yeah.
And when you say that healthcare costs are 17% of the United States gross domestic product, what would happen if we went to a national healthcare system to our economy? I can already hear people saying, oh, the economy would crash. We would have thousands of people out of jobs, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I'm by no means brilliant on this personally, but plans have been worked out for, let's say, a five-year transition period where the people affected still get incomes and job training and that type of stuff. And there are a couple of pieces of legislation that do a very good job of mapping this out. They're explained on the PNHP.org website. But also our own Pramila Jayapal, the bill that that she's behind, and I should have written the number down on that, but it aligns with a similar bill in the Senate, which I think was proposed by Bernie Sanders and
healthcare for all,
yeah,
or Medicare for all, rather.
Medicare for all, and it includes things like, you know, no deductibles, no coinsurance, and people think that this is first of all going to be enormously expensive, but they don't realize they're already paying that money, because imagine your employer has been covering your escalating health care premiums and costs, and you've not been getting very big salary increases, but the insurance company's been taken care of, and so you could see that as lost wages as one aspect of the whole thing. So it's tricky.
Yeah, it's complicated. And those insurance companies are powerful lobbyists, big money.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of those insurance companies are responsible for major construction of, because they invest their money in commercial real estate, that mm-hmm. kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So some might say the ramifications of, I would presume, the demise of those insurance companies would be a huge economic hit to the country. How would you respond to that?
I don't have a detailed explanation about that. I think you'd end up with more people actually in healthcare as providers and taking care of people. And it's hard to justify families who cannot afford to go to the doctor by saying, we've got to take care of those insurance companies.
Yeah. Good point. Very good point. And that then becomes a question of national values.
Yeah.
And I believe you told me before we came on the air that of the 34 developed countries in the world, only 4 do not have national health care: Chile, Turkey, Mexico, and the United States.
Right, universal health care.
Universal health care.
And across Europe, it is done slightly differently in different countries, but it's all considered a necessary public service. Some of them have strongly, strongly regulated insurance plans that absolutely control the standard and make it uniform across the country, and then absolutely restrict the amount of profits. But the net effect is much, much lower cost, and is paid by employers. And that's at one end of the spectrum. The other end is where you have complete national healthcare systems that are nationalized up and down from top to bottom. And then there are those in the middle. The one that seems best suited to us would be the Canadian system, where everything is privatized except for the insurance piece. And that is essentially Medicare. We have a Medicare program in the United States. Mm-hmm. It's been operating since 1965, and it operates with about 3% margin. It's very quick. It's very efficient, very low overhead. And, you know, these plans envision improving it, strengthening it, making payments to doctors better than they are now, but also so that doctors are on board, but also just to control costs across the board and improve the quality of coverage for everybody. And you should not have to, if you're sick, you should not have to think about taking whether or not to take your meds or take a full dose, or you shouldn't have to put off going to see the doctor. And we've been conditioned to think that every visit is a cost that is our responsibility.
Yeah.
And that's where I like to compare it to, we're a bit like frogs have been simmering on the stove for far too long. We need a reset. And that's part of the joy of writing this book, is that Linus Tolg offers that. Holy smokes. He's gobsmacked. It comes from the outside. Oh, I can't believe this. So that's...
Yeah, it's hard for us Americans to get that.
Yeah, it is.
I want to go back to the Canadian system that you mentioned that mm-hmm. you said might be most compatible with our current system.
Mm-hmm.
And you said it's privatized, but not. Can you explain that?
It's The role of the federal government up there is to and it's in partnership with the provinces as well. Their role is to fund. It's to provide the funding piece, so to pay for the doctors and so forth and hospital visits and that stuff. And those organizations simply submit their bill. They're privately owned. They're privately managed, and they submit their bills on a Friday afternoon.
The providers.
Yeah. And they'll have somebody in a doctor's office. It might be, an administrative responsibility to input the week's worth of claims, and they get payment the next week. Here, you're going to have an army of billers negotiating and going back and forth with insurance companies and waiting for payment. So those are the differences. And the book goes into that a little bit,
mm-hmm.
a little bit whimsically, but really quite accurately.
I was going to ask you what actually happens in the book, but then people won't read it if I ask that.
They should go to the Vashon Bookshop and buy one of the print copies.
The book, again, by Wes Charles, is Linus Tokes and the Billing Bot. You place this story in Seattle, on Capitol Hill.
Yeah.
Why did you make that choice?
Well, I'm over there a lot, and I like the idea of being able to walk through scenes and places that you're going to include in a story, and to take photographs and notice details, and it just feels really nice to be able to inhabit that part of the story before putting it on paper. So it's a convenience thing, but it's something I noticed that Ian Rankin does. He's a great writer from Scotland, and he does that a great deal in Edinburgh. And it's wonderful. It's almost like if you read all of his books, you feel like you know your way around Edinburgh.
Oh, that's interesting. So as you look ahead to more stories, I presume Linus Tokes is a character who's going to take us through more. Will they be medical mysteries or other mysteries?
I'm incubating one now, where it would intertwine a medical mystery with another mystery, because I don't want to reveal it right now. But
are you talking about dead bodies?
No. I'm going to go ahead. It would be actually his concern about climate change and global warming. So,
ooh,
how do you cross those wires and have a good time with it?
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Is this where we can talk about your name?
Well, yes, you could.
The whole idea of climate change brought it up for me.
I know.
Wes Charles is a nom de plume.
That's right.
Who are you really?
Well, my name is Mark Hickling, but who wants to see that on a book? I do some climate-related stuff for Voice of Vashon, and there'll be more of that coming up in future.
Tell us a little bit about that, would you?
Well, it really started with the good old Greg Wessel and following him to Stockholm and chronicling his Stockholm Climate Summit, where he brought in geoscientists from around the world and interviewing these people and hearing what they were up against in their individual countries, both in terms of people's awareness, but actually the changes that are taking place on the ground. And it really ignited a fire for me. And I also did an interview with an atmospheric scientist at Stockholm University, and it was just absolutely eye-opening. And so I'm going to be the other person, Mark Hickling, will be digging in on that stuff, even as Wes Charles continues to develop Linus Tokes in his own way.
So I happen to be a fanatic about climate change and climate crisis, and I'm wondering if you could give us a quick overview of what you learned from some of those folks in Stockholm about our climate crisis, where they see it's going, these scientists, what kind of potential solutions they might have come up with.
Well, the number one solution, the fellow that I consider the my most important insider in all of this is H.C. Hansen, and he's at Stockholm University. He's an atmospheric scientist, and he has precise numbers on carbon dioxide levels. They're around. People need to start learning these numbers. Historically, and I'm talking about going back 800,000 years, 280 parts per million was what we had as a high. It would cycle up and down with the glacial periods.
280
parts per million in our atmosphere of CO2. And last year, we're at 410. And it's starting to really take off. And because of something called inertia, the temperature change drags a little bit behind it. But temperatures at the poles are getting are going up much faster than on the Earth. And you would say 1 degree centigrade warming of the planet doesn't seem like much. That's 1.8 Fahrenheit. But it's actually with what's coming, and it's unstoppable in a way because the CO2 that's up there stays up there for hundreds of years. It doesn't get scrubbed by the trees in the ocean, you know, the way that it is sequestered and pulled down. They're kind of doing their best, even as in some parts of the world, people are doing their best to get rid of trees, you know. So I will tell you, the quick bulletin from him was he was concerned that the Amazon was about to flip from carbon sequestration to carbon production. And that is considered the lungs of the planet. So that's a very bad thing. And he was his other concern was this could all start happening faster than people are ready for. So I don't want to go too much more into that, but there are videos up on the Voice of Vashon website under Climate Watch. There's one video that if you have 45 minutes, it is soup to nuts. It's a deep dive education in climate. And I do recommend it. It's just in the office with him as he describes this. And there's a section that I had to cut out because he actually was moved to tears. And I said, let's take that part again. I thought it would be inappropriate to include that. But I mean, it, you know, if you're an earth scientist and you see what's going on, it's very shy. And the solution is no more fossil fuels. Electrify everything and make the electricity without fossil fuels.
And that is possible.
We're going to get there.
There are other folks.
I really do believe we're going to get there. Maybe not you and me, but the next generation is simply going to have to figure this out.
There are other folks who also say that the potential for carbon sequestration with regenerative agriculture, and I've recently learned with the development of phytoplankton and whales.
Yeah.
Could begin to do some massive carbon sequestration.
Yeah, it's going to be all hands on deck and efforts made on all fronts that's going to get us out of this.
One last comment about our major topic this morning, which is Linus Tok and the Billing Bot by your nom de plume, Wes Charles,
right.
Which is available where?
It's at the Vashon Bookshop. There's a version on Kindle for those people who do Kindling, but I really want to support the Vashon Bookshop. I think they're great, and they get all the proceeds.
Thank you, Wes Charles and Mark Hickling, for joining us here on Real Talk. I'm Susan McCabe, your host, here with you every Tuesday to seek answers to questions large and small. And stay tuned for the Captain's Chair with Joe Wubbold, who is going to bring us some really interesting information about what happens next in our Vashon community. Thanks for listening.